For dialing in, this is Mike Lafferty with the Vigilance Press podcast, and today we have a very special guest, Cam Banks of Margaret Weiss Productions. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
We're honored to have you. Thanks for showing up. And also, for his co-host, we have the new Godfather, James T. Dossie, the publisher and head bottle washer of Vigilance Press.
Yeah, the newly minted, new shiny new title on the desk. Yes,
he's got that new publisher smell.
Yeah. Yeah, which suspiciously smells like sweat right now. I've been busting my butt to try and get some stuff accomplished, but people may have noticed a slight hiccup in our publishing schedule, but that's mainly because I am kind of a bottleneck right now, trying to get everything lined up to stick my nose into everybody's business. But once we have everything moving smoothly again, I think you guys will see a significant improvement in our presentation. So hopefully everybody will enjoy it. We should be publishing, hopefully the first thing since I've been on next week will be one of our icons things. But
I thought we were switching to porn.
No. Well, okay. I mean, we could do that if we get enough feedback, but... That wasn't my intent.
I'm just sitting here nodding.
Carry on. Sorry, Cameron.
RPG porn is the wave of the future. So we're going to be making all the money. Anyway, moving on. Hey, quick plug before we jump into the interview proper. Our regular sponsor for the podcast, Noble Knight Games at noblenight.com. Check them out. They're awesome human beings. They sell great games. Your friendly local game store online.
They sell all the games.
Everything you could want, they sell it. So Mr. Banks, thanks again for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Nice. We invited you on today because you had some very interesting news, probably the biggest announcement, I think, at Gen Con this year.
Well, thank you.
The Marvel role-playing game.
That's right. Marvel Heroes is the name we're calling it this time. It's been Marvel license has had... it's a fair share of the spotlight before in RPGs, and this time around it's going on by the name Marvel Heroes.
Yeah, this is a franchise that has been game-ized. I don't know what the correct term would be, but you guys have picked this up after it. They recently did their own self-published one, right? That was the most recent one?
That was early 2000s.
Right, that was. So it's been idle a while.
Right.
So, yeah, we've all been wondering when somebody would pick up the torch for Marvel because it is such a well-loved comic book franchise. How does it feel to be? How did you guys get the license? Let's start with that.
Well, it is actually something I was going to say. I've also been wondering when the next one will come out, and then it turns out that it's us. And no, the process is always interesting with licensing because sometimes they contact you or someone. Within the company contacts you. Sometimes, as it was the case this time, we've reached out to them. Mm-hmm. And through a little bit of handshaking, we got to the point where we're sitting down in a meeting room with all the heads of publishing and licensing and all that kind of stuff, talking about what the RPG would look like, what it would be like to put a new RPG back out on the market again. And it was excellent. A lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be a dream meeting. Did you get to meet Joe Quesada or any of those people?
No, but there's a bunch of guys there who I'd seen their names before on various things, but mainly on the publishing side of things. I mean, not in terms of creative.
Oh, okay.
And it's, when you're someone like, I read the whole contents and I read the whole, sort of a list of people who produce these things, and I thought, oh, it's that guy, So it was a lot of fun. I mean, and I knew for sure that I had actually sort of struck the right kind of chord with them. It was when one of them was talking about something... Civil War, for example, I think it was talking about obscure characters that keep showing up in these comics, these big crossovers. And he mentioned Texas Twister. And he's a minor Texan character who was I think he's in the Rangers now. It's an initiative team down in Texas. But when he mentioned that guy, I said, oh, you mean Shooting Star's boyfriend? And the guy's like, oh, this guy. So I was actually quite excited. He's like, this guy's a total nerd. He knows exactly what I'm talking about. So, yeah, that was good.
Cam, I'm going to have to turn in my geek card because I thought I knew Marvel Comics back and forth, but I didn't know who any of those people were you just mentioned.
Go look them up. Look them up on the official handbook online.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well,
so basically, the interview process consisted of a trivia game.
Only a part of it that I was involved in, apparently. So
okay,
as is so often the case. At least in compute and tech support, it's that way. They're like, "Do you know this arcane piece of knowledge?" Well, yes, I do. And then they're impressed and moves on from there. But
this isn't actually your guys' first superhero game, though.
Well, technically it is. Uh-huh. I guess you could say Smallville was a superhero game, but I like to talk about that in terms of being a relationship drama game.
Okay.
It just happens to have superhero powers involved with it.
Okay.
You know, and that's a kind of a strange distinction to make, but it is based on a TV show. It's based on an ensemble cast show. And a lot of the design choices we had going into making Smallville were very much about, you know, getting that kind of interconnected relationship to bring it to the fore, mm-hmm. making the game about that, as opposed to a bunch of guys in spandex running around doing things with powers. So while superpowers are involved, because it's the story of Clark Kent and all of his friends, not as much of a spotlight being shone on that maybe as it would be in Marvel.
Okay. So tell us a little about... Oh, go ahead, Mike. You had something.
No, I was just going to say that kind of you guys are maybe the only RPG publisher ever that's had two games. That's going to have two games out in such a short time span with foots. It's urban
exactly.
talking, folks.
We're the only ones who have foots in our games. That's correct.
It's properly filled covers. There's no foots anywhere. No. Talking about, you've got a foot in the DC universe with Smallville, and you've got a foot solely. You know, you've got your whole leg, perhaps, in the Marvel universe with Marvel RPG.
Right. Now, it's not uncommon for hobby games to have this, though. I mean, I think the Versus card game, for example, and Heraclix, both of them very popular in their own sort of corners of the hobby industry, and they both have had licenses with both companies.
I guess that's true. You know, make a good point.
And we're all friends. I mean, it's funny to joke about them being the distinguished competition, you know, and so forth. But you know, comics is an industry that doesn't really thrive on being jerks behind the scenes. It works when people are all buying stuff. So I think it's a great time of the industry to start doing this sort of more transparent, open, positive way of approaching things, as opposed to being a, you know, knife you in the back kind of thing.
I hear you. Well, hey, let's wave the flag a little bit. What's on the schedule for the Marvel RPG line?
Okay, well, normally what would happen is that you'd have a core book come out and a bunch of supplements come after it. That's been our plan for the past. Smallville came out last year. We had one book just come out the past couple months called the Smallville High School Yearbook for teenage drama. And the Watchtower Report, which is kind of an expansion of the game, is coming out in the next couple months. But that model wasn't going to work for Marvel, we didn't think, because the idea of a core book and then a lot of supplements, you don't get that same sense of continuance, you know, with a, it's going to not be quite as much of a living, breathing, you know, product line. We wanted to go for quite a while. And Marvel also told us that what they really liked was the idea of events. The big crossovers are very popular, you know, even though some people kind of get frustrated by them, but they're very popular in terms of
sales.
Sales. But also showcasing minor characters that don't always get a chance to get out there on the mainstream. So, you know, if you're looking for Howard the Duck, you're going to find him in Fear Itself this year, you know, and fantastic. but it's a case where, you know, people often jump onto other titles too because they hadn't seen anything before, and then this new one will come out and they'll start buying that. So we thought about the event being the cornerstone of our product line. And to do that, we decided that for 2012, we would jump on to three events. We would start off with the Civil War, which was from about mid-2005. It was a very popular Marvel crossover because it involves everyone fighting each other, which is always a good thing. But the idea of, you know, whose side are you on, the Superhuman Registration Act side or the people who are sort of resisting against that, and that seemed like a great idea for our first big event crossover. So we went with that. The middle of the year next year, we're planning to do Annihilation, which is a very big...
Oh, my God. I am so glad you said that. I've had Dan Abnett on like three times talking about his cosmic work on Marvel. I'm so glad you said that.
I love his stuff. And I think it's, I mean, his and Keith Giffen and everybody else involved with those things, great stories. Very cosmic, very epic kind of things. And they bring characters, like I said, that you haven't seen for a while. They had Drax on there. And My favorite, Rocket Raccoon and
Groot, Beta Ray Bill,
Groot, all those people.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, you just made my night. That's incredible. Great. Okay. So you're going to be an event baseline. We're looking at what do we get out of you? You said Civil War, and then you're doing Annihilation, and what comes after that?
Age of Apocalypse, because a lot of people really loved that back in the 90s, and they even had a revisitation of the storyline back in the mid 2000s as well. So it's a popular storyline. It's also an alternate universe version of something, which we wouldn't have done up to that point. So we're kind of showing off a whole bunch of X-Men in the Age of Apocalypse side of things, space, cosmic stuff, and kind of a classic, you know, superhero crossover to start things off.
Okay, well, James.
I was just impressed. That's a large, you know, you've got a very big set of plans there. How many people do you have working on all these books, these source books? How are you breaking that down?
About 350,000 people, roughly.
It's the population of North Dakota.
No, actually, I've taken all of New Zealand's adult population, and they're working very hard on it.
No, well, they've all been laid off since Lord of the Rings quit
production. Well, they're filming The Hobbit right now.
Indeed.
But that's wrapping up soon. No, you bring up a good point, though. But previously, Margot Ross Productions hasn't been, you know, the largest of companies in terms of, you know, how many people working on any one given book. We've got a lot of freelancers. For Marvel, though, because it's dominating everything we do in 2012, I'm now the creative director of the company, which is neat. It's the name change. Doesn't really change a whole lot else, but it does mean that I have people working underneath me. Mm-hmm. And we've hired Amanda Valentine, who is a really good editor. She's amazing, as a managing editor for the whole line. So she can oversee an editorial pool who will be working together on the supplements at the same time. So we can have, you know, this cross back and forth discussion and make sure the whole thing's consistent. And we're calling the editorial team Damage Control.
Because
if you know anything about Marvel.
Nice. Yeah. I remember sort of Damage Control.
The writers and designers come along and do all they miss, and then Damage Control comes and polishes it up. So
that's fantastic. I love it.
Hey, just a quick thought before before the bourbon steals it from my memory. Mr. Abnett's a gamer.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he plays Warhammer 40K. He writes a lot.
Right.
He writes a lot in that universe, including the recent Space Marines movie they released a DVD. I don't know I'm going to have him on the podcast probably in a month or so. I'll mention it to him if you want, but you might reach out to him and see if he's interested in, you know, talking to you about this, because he's into the hobby.
That'd be cool.
To some degree. Yeah, great guy too. Great guy.
Actually, in the past, what we've done is we've often had people who work on these things on the other side of it. You know, the creative, the TV or whatever sort of side of things. Sometimes have them do introductions or forewords for a book. So it would be awesome if Dan could do a foreword for Annihilation. That'd be fantastic.
I find him to be very approachable. I mean, I'm just the guy running the Vigilance Press podcast, and he always answers my emails, and he's very receptive. And we've had him on like 3 or 4 times in the last couple of years. So, I think
nice.
Dan would be a good person to reach out to for that. So,
I just had my big pile of Annihilation tie-in stuff show up in my UPS inbox today. Like a very, very heavy box full of stuff to catch up and read up again.
You know, he is working on they're having the Annihilators come to Earth in September. I think they're going to fight the Avengers.
They have to.
Yeah, well, when you go to Earth, you have to fight the Avengers.
Exactly.
It's part of customs. You know, you have to get through, and then they can stamp your visa once you've fought the Avengers.
Right. Some years, all you get is the Black Knight and Cersei and Scarlet Witch and stuff. You're like, well, where are you guys? Come on, I want to fight Captain America.
I feel kind of bad. It's just Black Knight. Where are you again? Are we at a Ren Fair? What are you doing here? Yeah.
And Crystal. And you have to all wear leather jackets that look really like, you know.
Oh, God. Bring up the Iron Age, man. You're bringing up the Iron Age. Well, hey, are there any other events you can tell us that you've got books planned for?
Well, the way that, like I was saying, those are the three events that we have in mind for 2012. To lead things off, though, we're putting out a $20 paperback sort of trade-sized book called The Basic Game. And the reason that's going to come out first is so people can try that out and play the game and see what they think of it. The way that we're doing this is The Basic Game and the premium versions of all the event books are going to have a content in them called the Operations Manual. And that's the rule book. So you can buy the basic game, and we'll also put in a mini event in there. It's based on Brian Michael Bendis's Breakout, in the very first arc of story of New Avengers.
The New Avengers, where Riker's, it's Riker's Island?
The Raft. It's the one that's next to Riker's Island.
Yeah, the super villain prison gets broken open by Electro, and right. Everybody's out. Yeah,
a whole ton of people we can just put stats in the game for.
Very nice.
So in that book, that'll be like, you know, we picked that one because we felt that having the New Avengers, it's a great little crossover of all the different Marvel families. I mean, it's got Wolverine, Spider-Man, Cap, Iron Man, and some other people who people don't normally associate with mainstream comics. I mean, Luke Cage is very popular now, but back then he was just, you know, Power Man. So we thought having those guys written up would be an excellent way to start, give people a good variety of choice. And we're also throwing in the Fantastic Four and the Joss Whedon era X-Men with Emma Frost. And
awesome.
So those guys will be in the same book. And you can pick and choose who you want to have show up to the Raft and stop Graviton and those guys from breaking out.
So do I understand this correctly? You're actually going to include the core rules in multiple books in case somebody doesn't want one particular, he's not interested in like Age of Apocalypse, but he wants to just play this other storyline. You'll have a deluxe version of that book with the rules in it.
That's correct.
That's an interesting approach.
Yeah, we'll have a premium version, which is, like I said, it's a deluxe version, and we'll have an Essentials edition, and the Essentials one has no rule book attached. So you can buy that if you've already got the game. You don't want to buy the more expensive deluxe version.
Now, I'm assuming the core rules allow you to create your own characters as well.
Right. I mean, given it's a universe of 8,000 or more characters, the idea, obviously, would be that you'd want to model, create any character from the Marvel Universe you want. But that said, there's nothing stopping you from making an original one. We can't do that because that's not how our license works, obviously, because we don't want to make up anybody new.
Mm-hmm.
But our rules are going to be designed so that you can do that. If you wanted to play Moon Knight and you just bought the game and there was no Moon Knight data file anywhere for anyone to look at, you should be able to use the rules to make Moon Knight without much trouble.
Hey, Cam, can I ask you a question regarding that?
Sure.
And I assume the answer is no, but I just have to ask. You guys aren't going to consider any kind of third-party publisher program just to use the superhero rules that you're devising here?
At this stage, no. I mean, not for 2012. We won't be thinking about that. It's a little bit busy. So for 2012, we're going to be very busy doing all the stuff that is required for Marvel in our product line. But in the future, we have considered the idea of having third-party people working on stuff, licenses, that kind of thing.
Okay, that'd be awesome, because the Cortex system is very popular, and you guys have, you know, boy, how many games have we done with Cortex now? Off the top, I know Buffy, Smallville, Leverage. Is Leverage Cortex?
We didn't do Buffy, though.
You didn't do Buffy? I thought you did Buffy. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Buffy's a great game, though.
It seems like a natural fit for your company. I apologize. Battlestar Galactica was you guys?
Uh-huh.
So how is that game? I mean, you mentioned it's kind of evolved over time with the demands and responses from fans. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, Cortex system as it stands now is different from how it was when we first introduced it. It used to be part of the Serenity role-playing game, was the first big release we put out back in 2005. And since then, we've had the licenses for Battlestar Galactica. We have Supernatural, which we still have, and Smallville, Leverage. One of Margaret's own properties, Dragon Brigade, which is something that has been... she just started putting out novels for that. It's kind of a swashbuckling fantasy type license, but since it's hers, you know, it's much easier to get hold of. But no, over time, the thing with Cortex is that it started out being very much like a kind of a, you'd roll some dice. The dice were, all of your stats were rated in dice, like if you had a strength of D6 and you had vitality D8, a little bit like Savage Worlds does it. And then after that, you'd roll dice and you'd try and beat a difficulty number. And there's a lot of other stuff going on with that, but what we tended to do was not really change the system all that much. We would change a few things, like, you know, sort of advantages and disadvantages. Things would change. We'd put different stats in for different people, but the rules hadn't really altered significantly. And when I came on board and we decided that we're going to do Leverage and Smallville and we had those licenses, I felt that they would benefit more from kind of rebuilding the system from the ground up. And so the new model is now to take sort of a foundational idea of what Cortex is like and sort of design the game. So, you know, with Leverage, it's a game of high-stakes action and capers and flashbacks and things. So it's a very different kind of game from Smallville, which is very relationship heavy and very much more about sort of TV drama and that kind of stuff. So to separate the two, the sort of classic version of Cortex from the new one, we call the stuff that we had from Serenity up through to Supernatural, we call that classic Cortex now, because it's more or less the same system. You can use them more or less interchangeably. And Cortex Plus is the name that we call the sort of shared rules that go with each of these new ones, but the games themselves are quite different in some ways. So you can't take a character from Leverage and play him in Smallville. It's a different set of stats. It's a different sort of approach to how conflicts resolve, that kind of thing. We wanted to make them as tightly fit towards the genre as we could.
Okay, very nice. Hey, just out of curiosity, when you did Serenity, did you meet Joss Whedon?
I have never met him, no.
Oh, okay, bummer.
I wasn't in charge then either, though, so it would have been some schlub.
some other loser. It wasn't me. I understand.
Well, hey, so you say you're rebuilding this, obviously, for the Marvel Heroes game, since that's your new policy. What sort of obviously we can't talk too much about the system just yet, but what sort of approach did you take? I mean, obviously, when, like, for example, with Smallville, you really built the system around relationships and that narrative drive being, you know, the kind of driving mechanic of the system. What's your approach with Marvel that's different?
Well, obviously, I think in Marvel comics, especially in the last 10, 15 years, you've seen a whole lot of that same kind of drama stuff being brought to the fore. The different writers are taking some experimental leaps out there and trying to do something different. I would say that stuff that Brian Bendis has done is different from, say, the Stan Lee days. But even back in terms of the original years of with the early parts of Jack Kirby and Stan and those guys, I mean, they always had motivation and sort of real-life storyline stuff being very important to characters. Mm-hmm. So Spider-Man had a horrible... I mean, he had one problem after the other. You know, everything was pretty much a downer for him. And the X-Men pretty much hated and feared by everybody. So, you know, I mean, that does present us with some ideas as to how we can go about making things work in Marvel as opposed to any other sort of generic superhero system.
Gotcha.
But I would say the biggest thing that came to us when we thought about it was everything seems to be about some kind of meaningful choice. You know, everyone has these choices to make, and if it's a superhero moment, if it's a moment that's filled with drama, it's going to have two consequences, each of them being pretty significant. You know, we don't want people to roll dice to see if they can cross the city with their web slingers. I mean, that's not important. The dice should come out when things really come to a point where, you know, this thing could happen or that thing could happen. You know, we've got this moment of uncertainty. We don't really know how it can turn out, but it could be pretty bad. So that's kind of an approach, at least in terms of how to determine what's going to happen, what things the dice come out for, mm-hmm. that you don't always see maybe in some other games.
Okay.
Hey, you mentioned Brian Michael Bendis. This kind of reminded me of the Ultimates, and I'm wondering, you know, that's a very different universe than the Marvel 616. I mean, for instance, Reed Richards is a villain, and the Wasp is dead, and Spider-Man's dead. Right. Are you guys looking at doing a supplement related to the Ultimates universe?
And at this point, I mean, like I said, you can tell from the lineup we have next year, we're trying to sort of cover a few bases that are quite broad. You know, Civil War is one of them. And the other thing, too, is that each time we put an event out, all the character write-ups are going to be based on that event. So it's going to be the Wolverine of Age of Apocalypse or the Wolverine of Civil War. And they're not always the same character. I mean, they obviously have many things in common. But part of our write-ups, we're going to be focusing on sort of... There'll be overall big, important decision points to make in the course of the event itself. And there should be more personal ones, things that are kind of tied in to make the character feel as if they're actually that person. Hmm. And so we'll present those in the write-ups, and so you can have some real good thing to grab onto when you start playing the character.
Okay. Now, I've heard some large numbers being thrown around in terms of numbers of supplements that are planned right now. I think I heard 16 books.
Yeah.
Can you confirm that?
Well, three of them are the same as three other ones, because there's three essential event books and three premium ones, and those are the same content. Each of them has, you know, an event, and one of them has a operations manual attached to it. So really, the six is really just three.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we are selling them separately. And then each event will have three supplements of its own, and a supplement will be a $20 sort of soft cover book, maybe about 124 pages. And so those things will come along and have additional storylines, characters, spin-off stuff that will be involved in it. So as an example, with Annihilation, which you're very fond of, War of Kings is going to be one of the supplements for that. And Thanos Imperative is the third supplement. And the first one's, I'm trying to remember, Conquest. So, I mean, you've got the Annihilation storyline to start off with the event. And after you're done with that, you can pick the supplements up and carry things through and, you know, throw more stories and stuff at your players.
Okay, so we're looking at between 9 and 12 books in just the first year, it sounds like. Every event has three.
Yeah, three supplements each event, and each event book, there's two of those, that's five. So three events with five books is 15, plus the basic game is 16.
Oh, so that's just the first year. Can I ask how many years you have the license for?
At the moment, we're looking at next year, and I'm pretty certain we'll be, you know, do well enough that we can keep going for next year after that, too.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Okay, nifty.
Yep. If we crash and burn, obviously, you know, that's going to change things. I'm thinking positive.
You got to be optimistic. Are we going to do any cross promotions with Marvel? Any ads in the books or stuff like that?
That'd be cool. Yeah. I'd like to do that, you know. But that's all stuff we have to talk to the marketing people about. We do get along very well with them, though. I mean, I really like working with Marvel. They've been a great company so far to work with.
Okay. Did you get to meet any of the... Well, you mainly working with the publishing side. You said you didn't meet too many creatives, right?
Right. You know, I hope next year to go to San Diego Comic-Con, which is... I've been there a couple times before. But this will be the first time I actually will go there with the intent purpose of meeting some Marvel people, which would be neat. And our business manager is going to New York City Comic-Con next month, October. But I sadly will not.
Well, if you want to send me a note, I'm actually looking at heading up to the Virginia Comic Con in October as well. So,
awesome.
Hopefully, I'll get the chance to meet some of these guys.
Yeah, I got a chance to interview Stan Lee about 10, 12 years ago when I was working as a journalist. It was back in the 90s when he was doing Stan Lee Incorporated, or Stan Lee Media Incorporated. And if you want to piss him off, ask him about Jack Kirby's Scarlet Spider. That stuff's the conversation calls.
Oh, dear.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned that. But no, he's a great guy, a great interview. He's
I like him. I mean, he's always very affable. He's got a great presence, very, very charismatic guy.
I think he's a master. Maybe he's like Bruce Lee in terms of the art of self-promotion.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's the only one who does what he does as good as he does it. It's really amazing. But yeah, if you get a chance, that'd be a guy that'd be a guy who's handed to shake, you know, while you still have a chance to. So,
yeah.
Well, you're a comic book fan. This has got to be some kind of nerd dream to be working on this project.
It kind of is. Yeah, a kid from New Zealand who's doing work on Marvel comic stuff. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'd be pinching myself every 5 minutes if I were in your shoes, because that's like a dream gig.
I don't think I have time to pinch myself, though, so we'll see. One thing, though, that's interesting is, I mean, like, people have asked me about, you know, when did I start reading comics, and the usual kind of, you know, topic comes up about that. I think the first comic book I remember reading was Iron Man comic book, and in New Zealand and Australia, what they do is they used to repackage the things into black and white sort of reprints. And so one of the first comics I ever read or remember reading and you know, knowing the words to it was a reprint of a bunch of Iron Man stories, and they weren't even sequential, so it probably didn't make any sense to me at the time. But I can remember reading one where it was Iron Man versus Crimson Dynamo, and then the Titanium Man comes out of the water at the end, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, and I remember thinking, that's just scary. And I'm sure it was a big deal then, but looking back now, I'm just like, oh yeah, you know, my usual people I fight. It's not that big of a deal.
Hey, you guys are going to... 2012, isn't that the same year the Avengers movie comes out?
It sure is.
Are you guys going to have a tie-in?
Are we going to go see the movie? Yes, we are.
Well, of course we're going to see the movie. But, you know, you're publishing the Marvel role-playing game the same year the biggest Marvel movie ever comes out. Just got to ask if you're going to do a tie-in.
I would not rule anything out at this point.
Ooh. Oh, look at you. Cards close to the vest. All right. You heard it here first, folks. No comment.
No. Well, I'd like to talk about this. I mean, the one thing that's interesting is that the cinematic universe is obviously different from 616, the same that the TV show, the cartoons, are also different. And, you know, when I talk about this to people, I like to bring up the fact that they all come from the same source. I mean, they all come from the comic books. And so that's kind of where we're hoping that most of our stuff stems from the same way. We're taking the comic books and making a game out of it. And I don't see anything stopping people from playing something like the Captain America movie if they want to without rules. It shouldn't be difficult whatsoever.
Okay, but as far as official support, it sounds like your license is pretty much all about the comic books.
Right.
Okay, understood. Well, so that's a heck of a license. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's the big one.
You're limited.
Yeah. Hey, boy, you know, I guess you told us everything you've got in the schedule. I just keep thinking if I were in your shoes, I'd be thinking about all, you know, obviously you've got Cosmic with Annihilation, but, man, there's so much cool mystical stuff, you know, with Doctor Strange and Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night and Marvel. So you're great to delve into that a little bit.
I'm looking forward to all kinds of things. I mean, you know, and we haven't even touched on anything in the past, you know, say 4 or 5 years. I mean, you know, I was a big fan of Secret Invasion even. So, you know, and there's something big coming up, I'm sure, next year. They've been dropping hints all over the place about some huge thing for 2012, so I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, I got to focus on what's right in front of me.
Yeah, fair enough.
If I look too far ahead, I lose sight of it.
Yeah, well, Secret Invasion, that's actually what I wanted to ask you about. I was surprised I didn't see it in the schedule because that's, you know, an alien invasion like that is sort of, you know, it's one of the archetypical comic book sort of things, you know.
Well, we can drop a lot of things into the Civil War storyline as well to kind of set that up, but nothing too much. I mean, the one of the funniest things is that we'll have Spider-Woman in the basic game because she's in Breakout, and she also appears in the Civil War. In both cases, it's not really her.
Yeah, because she was abducted years before, so really the Spider-Woman in the New Avengers was the Skrull Queen.
Yep.
Skrull Queen, sorry. You shouldn't drink in podcast, kids.
You shouldn't. And I don't even know how to pronounce it. Varanki? I think it's how you pronounce it. Varank? I don't know. I always think it's Varanki. It sounds like.
Let's just say that's right. I'm good with that.
We'll pretend it is.
So.
Yeah, you know, but we're not going to write down, like, her stats won't show her having shape-shifting powers. Because it just wouldn't, you know, it's on one level, yes, it makes sense, but it's tipping the hat too early in that particular event.
So for all intents and purposes, the Spider-Woman appearing in Breakout is Spider-Woman.
Yeah, or she can fly, which the real one couldn't.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's I can totally understand why you would do it that way. That's pretty nifty. Alrighty, well, let's see. I got a bunch more questions of things I'm betting you can't answer because of NDAs.
Most likely.
Yeah, James, anything else you'd like to ask?
Well, I've been mostly kind of sitting here and trying to think of something good that you haven't covered yet. But for the most part, I think what you're basically at a stage now where we can't talk too much about the system. And of course, I'm a system guy. I'm the kind of guy who likes to pull role-playing game out, look at the numbers, and jump straight to how to build a character. You know, it's like how you know, what kind of focus on the system? I mean, you've already told us that it's all about choices, but I'm like, you know, is somebody who picks this up and he wants to, you know, play Ben Grimm and like punch somebody through a couple of walls, is he gonna find that in there? Is he gonna find that kind of tactical combat?
Yeah. And in terms of tactical, and I'm not saying you'd hear anything about measuring how much inches I can move across the table or how big my mini is, that kind of thing. At this stage, we're not ruling out having the option of having miniatures on the table and using it to help you out in the big fights.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't that kind of game. It isn't going to be the kind of game where you have – it's not Heroclix, even though I have a whole ton of those. What it will do, though, is give you options in a battle to make it feel like you're actually having some decision-making about how things are going to turn out each way along through it. It's not going to be the kind of thing where we roll some dice and you say, okay, I win. Let's just talk about how I won. it isn't about that. But then again, it isn't going to be round by round. I'm going to make my roll here to punch you here and do this thing. There'll be kind of a blend between both. You have to see when it comes out.
Oh, interesting, interesting. That's very exciting, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing that part of it. So, what...
Do we have a release date? Do we have a street date?
February for the basic game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's coming up in a hurry.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
That's galloping. If you figure in print schedules, that's galloping towards us.
Yep.
That light at the end of the tunnel is a train, right?
Yeah.
Well, it'll never stop. We'll be putting books out each month after that from now until the end of time, I think.
So what is that license? I mean, we know that like when Green Ronin got their DC Adventures license, they pretty much licensed it for 4 books. Sounds like you guys, are more. Sounds like you might have a little more open-ended approach to this game.
Well, like I said before, it's going to matter. Basically, they're going to see how we do on the initial outlay,
uh-huh.
And if we do well and then we're happy with it and they're happy with it, we'll look into renewing, which will be great. And if things don't work out how we want them to work out, that's a different thing, you know.
Right. Okay.
But it's it's definitely more books in one initial schedule than we've ever had before.
Yeah.
Can I ask? I know for Green Ronin, I know the art for the DC books has been not a challenge, but just when you have so many characters, they've got crowdsourcing threads over on the Green Ronin forums, trying to find, hey, give us an image in a book that's a good illustration of character X. And with Marvel, you've got much the same type, problem in that you've got a universe with thousands of characters. Right. And I'm guessing the art that you're using on this is all coming from the Marvel backlog. Yep. You guys have your own researchers, or how are you handling that kind of Herculean challenge?
We have lots of books.
Well, that's why it's a Herculean challenge.
Yeah. No, I mean, and we have a good, relationship with the archive people at Marvel as well, so that's cool. But the other thing that works in our favor here is that we do have a specific window of time in which these characters appear. So we don't have to worry about the entire breadth of their history. We just go for the iconic version of them during that event.
Well, I guess that's true. If you're just focusing on, Civil War, you've got, mm-hmm. Between, 30 and 40 books, the core story you can pick somebody from. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously there are some times where you'll be wanting to get a good shot of someone and you really want them to look great, and each image you have of that has a fist or a leg or something from somebody else sticking through it. So, that's always a thing to worry about. But we hired a guy who, his name is Jeremy Keller, who's a really great game designer in his own right, but he's the one who's responsible for most recently a game called Tech Noir, which was on Kickstarter.
That was very popular.
Yeah, and he is he's our art director, so I've decided that I'll make him the guy responsible for making sure the pictures are great while I worry more about the content. And so if at the end of this thing he is an old man and cursing my name, that's why.
So of the books that you have planned out so far, which is your favorite event?
I like all 3 of them. That's part of why I picked them out. It's I would say most recently I've been really grooving on the Annihilation storyline because it was probably of the 3 the one I had read most recently, mm-hmm. Last year. And so that, it's fresh in my mind. But then again, everything, I'm rewriting all this stuff. I'm looking forward to pulling out a whole bunch of Age of Apocalypse stuff that I don't remember reading for quite some time and getting up to speed on that again.
Yeah, that would be a lot. Well, I'm just very envious of you, Cam. You've got a great job.
Yeah, it sounds great on the surface, and you usually have to start doing this stuff, and then people complain about the book, and they don't like what you did with it. It goes on. But yeah, there's all... No, I think it's definitely a case where you can complain all you like about the fact that your job is difficult, but when it's a game design job and it's working with Marvel, I mean, you already have a pretty good job there, really. So,
Yeah, it's... like I say, it sounds like it'd be... if I were you, I'd be loving work every day, but then again, I'm not actually sitting down on my cubicle thing. Oh my God, I have to write, 340 pages by February of next year. So
yeah.
So a bit of an outside view.
So speaking of presentation on the books, this just jumped into my head. You mentioned that the size of the books were going to be sort of like graphic novels. Is that does that mean your guys are sticking with soft cover on these guys, or are you going to do any hardcover books?
Yeah, both the event books are going to be, both versions of each event will be hardcover.
Oh, good.
So the Civil War Premium and the Civil War Essentials will both be hardcover books.
Nice.
But basic game and the three supplements, there will be like a trade paperback. Same dimensions too. We're going with whatever the size that Marvel likes to use for theirs.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm a big hardcover fan myself, so that's why I had to ask.
Yeah, there's something about a nice hardcover book on your shelf. You just don't get that same sensation from PDF.
Yeah. And what we might do in the end is maybe 2013 we'll put out a new version of the basic game with a different event, make it hardcover, maybe you have more stuff in it. You know, there's no real end to what we could do with this, which is kind of cool.
You guys could be going forever. I mean, I'm hoping you keep going to 2020 and put out a Secret War event, you know, series.
There you go.
Because that was actually, as geeky as it was, it's kind of a maligned event, you know, by some hardcore people, but that was my introduction to Marvel Comics.
Wow, really?
Yeah, yeah. In 1985, I think I was in junior high school. Yeah, I was really into that.
I think that was my big introduction to purchasing comics on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Before then, comics were just something I picked up at like the drugstore or whatever when, you know, my dad was shopping for something or you know, I was just there and I said, "Oh, hey, look," and I'd pick up a copy of an issue of the Defenders or an Iron Man book, but I never had continuity before. I think it was the Secret Wars where the issue where Hulk is holding the mountain up and everybody else is basically needling him to try and keep him angry enough to keep it up. Mm-hmm. And I just had to find out what happened next after that. So it was that was the one that got me into it too, I think, as a regular reader.
Well, I was reading I had a subscription to Fantastic Four at the time. It would come every month in the mail. And it was one of the great ways of getting things in New Zealand was the, you know, subscriptions. But at one point, they all went away, and then they came back, and She-Hulk was in the group. I'm like, what? So yeah. I had to find out what was going on. That was very confusing.
Yeah, but Ben Grimm was hanging out on a little Beyonder world for a few years there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I wasn't going to complain. I liked She-Hulk quite a lot. She was awesome.
Yes.
You know, I found an old... God, I found an old Marvel graphic novel from 1986 when she was in the Fantastic Four. It was, I want to say, the Living Monolith, this giant pharaoh strutting through New York, punching down buildings.
Wasn't he the one that he was living pharaoh, and when Havoc would, you know, use his power on him, he turned into a gigantic rock sort of stone thing?
I don't remember that, but it would certainly fit into the milieu we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of this book, he became Ego of the Living Planet. I'm not sure if that was still in continuity, but at the time, Annihilation happened. But, yeah, because the Ego made an appearance there, too. But, yeah, crazy stuff. So, now that, like I say, I'd like to see this. I mean, I'm a Marvel fanboy from way back. I'd love to see this keep going forever, because just off the top, I can think of a ton of events I'd love to see in there. But
oh man, all I can think of is all the. Now I'm starting to think of all the weird crossovers that Marvel has had over the years, like the. One of the earlier ones I remember, Spider-Man, you know, had to make his cameo in the Transformers.
Spider-Man makes his cameo in every book.
Second issue, you have to have Spider-Man. It's just a rule. Yeah. But
you know, I like to see go ahead. Sorry.
I think there was a comic. Was it Sleepwalker where he? So Spider-Man swings in the first issue or second issue and says, "Don't worry, keep reading this comic book because it's really cool. It's got Sleepwalker, and no one knows where the heck he is. You know, they just made him up." And in fact, I think I like that Darkhawk comes back in Annihilation. He was a very much a B-lister character. Darkhawk was, and they did some weird things with him.
They really kind of rejuvenate the whole concept of Darkhawk, make him into sort of this dark Green Lantern sort of character.
Yeah, and
I
guess he finds out there are others out there who also like him, and they're all just jerks.
The Brotherhood of the Raptors are a group that manipulates Galactic Society through assassinations and that kind of thing, yeah.
Not really what you'd think of as your perfect basis for a superhero model, I don't think.
It's a little darker, but I think that's how Abnett writes, maybe coming from the Warhammer universe. But yeah, it was cool stuff. No, I was just thinking, if you're doing iconic versions per event, Spider-Man and the Secret Wars, he beats up the entire X-Men team by himself.
Yeah.
In a hallway.
Yeah.
I want to see those stats. That would be great.
Well, one thing that I think we were talking about this too, and we had gone back and forth about how to handle such things. I mean, the classic Fire Lord thing where Firelord shows up and there's a battle between Firelord and Spider-Man in New York City.
My favorite Spider-Man comic of all time. Yes.
And later on, he becomes Captain Universe for a few issues. That's pretty exciting too. But no, the thing with him is that if you're playing a single character and there's no team, if the team has a number of different, like if you can consider them as being a group of people with different approaches to things, the fewer people on a team, the more of those slots they have to take up and cross over. And so if you have a single person, you wonder how they are so powerful and can take care of so many things. It's because they're a team in one person. It's very possible that what we might do is allow for something like a solo player version of Spider-Man having like a whole lot more actual ability to take things on than, say, Spider-Man in New Avengers, where it seems as if he's often just a comic relief / agility guy. So it's an interesting way of approaching it. We'll have to look into how that works out and play there.
Yeah, you're right. That is kind of how they write him in New Avengers. He's sort of there for the comic relief.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you're on a team, you tend to fill a sort of a slot. You do something. It's your role. It's your niche. And then if you're by yourself, like Wolverine's almost always this way, but I think of everybody, he probably doesn't change as much. He's the same guy he is on the New Avengers as he is by himself running around in Japan or anywhere else too.
Yeah, well, I'd have to agree. I was just having a conversation with some of Wolverine the other day. I've got several female friends who are big X-Men fans, big mm-hmm. Wolverine fans. They've never picked up a comic book in their life. But they've seen all the X-Men movies. They've seen the Wolverine movie. They'll talk to you about the character for 20 minutes, but they wouldn't pick up a comic book if they had to.
Well, it's because it doesn't have Hugh Jackman in it.
That might be part of it.
Yeah.
He's not an unhandsome guy. So
he's an Australian, you understand.
I know, but okay. He plays a Canadian, and we like them.
I don't know if he's playing a Canadian very well. He seems to be playing him more of with an American accent than anything
else. But the Canadians and Americans are the same people, aren't they, really?
Well, Canada's just America's hat. No.
Now you see what it's like.
My friend's in Canada. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So the Commonwealth is a big dysfunctional family, isn't it, Cam?
It is. But the problem is, it's just like the X-Men. We fight internally. When you have some big external threat, we'll team up and smack you over.
That sounds a little ominous. What are you saying there, man?
Some of us were not as much of an effort, as the larger ones. But no, I'm just kidding. I mean, I think the whole thing about about actors and so forth is that we've often had the case where an actor's come from New Zealand and everyone thinks he's from Australia, and he'll move to Australia and live there for most of his adult life and then forget that he even came from New Zealand. So we just have to grumble to ourselves and get very upset.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah. Well, hey, I think we have covered this subject from soup to nuts pretty well. Is there anything else we wanted to highlight before we call it a podcast?
I don't think so, but we will be doing preview stuff. We'll be showing things on our website and Facebook and posting things and having playtest people coming in.
Yeah, what is the link for your website?
It is just margaretweiss.com.
Mm-hmm. And that's one right S now, in Weiss, right?
Yes, that's correct. Rams, we've had people say it's two S's and they're not really right because she knows how to spell her name.
Yes, exactly.
But, and it's margaretweiss.com. There's no content for Marvel out there right now because that's something we're going in the process of doing. But we'll make sure we have stuff to show people as we lead up towards the February release of Basic Game.
Nice. Okay, so just watch Margaret Weiss Productions. Watch your guys' Facebook page. Do you have a Twitter?
I have one. I'm Boy Monster on Twitter. You can follow me on there. And we have one. It's Margaret Weiss Pro, one word. And that is our official Twitter release thing, where I talk in my proper professional voice instead of the one I talk with otherwise.
All right. Understood. So keep your eye out for more information on the Marvel Heroes. Marvel Heroes RPG is the correct name, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Well, hey, Cam, thank you very much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate that.
Absolutely. It was great getting to meet you as quickly as I did at Gen Con, but hopefully we'll actually get to hang out a little bit next year and celebrate your success.
I envision running a whole lot of Marvel next year, so I think anytime you want to jump in a game, just let me know.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Especially if we can record it for a podcast. That would be awesome.
That was my dog saying goodbye. She's an Australian Shepherd mix, so she's a little angry, but it's all right. All right, well, hey, folks, until next time, stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant.